Okay, good evening, friends. Welcome here to our Granite Bay Bible Study family, and want to welcome those who are studying with us on Facebook, either on the Granite Bay site or the Doug Batchelor site. We are continuing our study in the book of Genesis, and tonight we're going to be dealing with Genesis 31 and 32, if we can do it, but we're going to begin with a word of prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you for the promise that if we ask for understanding and wisdom that you will grant it. Lord, we pray for that now. We know that these words are just rich with meaning, even though they were written thousands of years ago. They're full of meaning for our worlds today, for our lives today. Just pray that you bless and help us to understand your will for our lives and know more about truth as a result of our study. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. All right, well, we are going through Genesis, and Pastor Ross said, I've got to thank Pastor Ross because I was actually down for last week. I forgot to mention I was going to be in Albuquerque, so it was hard to do at a granddaughter's graduation. And so with very little notice, Pastor Ross jumped in. And I understand that we're beginning with Genesis chapter 31. Now, I may not read every word in this chapter because I do want to get to the part about Jacob wrestling with the angel, which is the next chapter, but something interesting transpires here that I think is very helpful. Let's go to verse 1. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he's acquired all of this wealth. So now Jacob's wealthy. And you remember what happened in the previous chapter? Jacob told Laban, look, I worked 14 years for your daughters, and now I'm a married man, I've got a growing family, and how am I to provide for my own house? I can't work for nothing. And so they agreed on some wages. Later, Jacob says, Laban changed his wages 10 times. Once he saw that Jacob was making money, he would change the agreement. And Jacob basically said, you know, whenever the sheep or the goats, bear, speckled, spotted, or brown or black, I'll take them. And they're usually the minority. That was the rare recessive gene. But it seemed like once Laban agreed, all of a sudden they all started bearing the speckled, the spotted, the striped, and the black and the brown. And Jacob's flocks and herds, this menagerie of colors, was growing. And Laban started to know, I'm decreasing, he's increasing. Laban's sons saw that, and they began to resent it. That here, he came in a straggler, we gave him a job, and now he's becoming wealthier than we are. And he could realize, look, this isn't going to end well. I can tell that Laban's attitude towards me has changed. And it's probably, knowing Laban, as conniving as he was, I mean, this is a guy who had switched daughters on the wedding night. He was very conniving. Of course, Jacob was getting a little of his own medicine in what he had done to his brother and his father, right? That Jacob thought, as soon as I tell him we're going to pack up and head back home, he's going to do something to try to take me from all of our stuff. He thought, if I'm going to leave, I'm going to have to just spirit my family away quietly. So he mentions this to his family. It says, the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers, to your family, and I will be with you. Now that was a very important promise to him because he did not leave under good conditions. When he left, his brother was breathing threatenings and slaughter, wanted to kill him. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field. He takes them out where there's no one to listen. He has a private consult. And he said, look, your father's countenance is not favorable towards me, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your fathers deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said the speckled will be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said the streaked will be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked, or striped, we'd say. For God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived, and then he goes into this very interesting thing in the previous chapter, when the flocks, and I know Pastor Ross talked about that. We talked a little about it afterward. You remember, Jacob peels the bark off these poles, and he puts them in the troughs where the animals come to drink and to eat. And the poles are striped. If you were here for this, and a lot of people said, that just proves the Bible's not true. How in the world would looking at striped poles make them bear striped offspring. Well, I don't know exactly how that worked, but I will tell you something interesting that has come up. They have discovered that an animal's external appearance can be transformed by what they behold with their eyes in their DNA. An example of this would be the hair in the Arctic is white. The hair in the desert is brown. You can breed the two of them together. They are both hairs. Something in their system that God designed meant that they can try to camouflage with their environment. And they don't understand it. They've tested this with moths and different creatures, and it seems like their DNA changes based on their environment. So I don't know if that's what's happening in the previous chapter, but he refers to that again here. And Rachel and Leah, I'm in verse 14, Genesis 31, 14. Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, "Is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers to him?" He'd even begun to resent his daughters. "For he sold us completely, consumed our money." Now some have wondered, you know, a father was sometimes supposed to provide wedding gifts for his daughters, and probably whatever he pledged them, he had spent it, or he had used it. "He's completely consumed our money, for these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's now. Then whatever God has said to you, we will do it." They said, "Jacob, husband, we are with you." And Jacob rose. Now this is very serious. He's been, I mean, you know, he's been with his father-in-law for 21 years, roughly, 7 years for each daughter and seven for his possessions. And without saying goodbye, I mean, how would your grandparents feel if you'd been living with them and one day they come home and you're gone? No farewell, no goodbye, no phone call. And they just pack up and they head out because they just couldn't trust Laban. Jacob rose, he set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock. Now he has a considerable herd. A herd's not the word. He's got more than a circus of animals, which he had gained. His acquired livestock, which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep. Shepherds shear their sheep what time of year?
Summer, spring.
Spring. Springtime. So this is happening during the Passover. Just keep that in mind, which when Jesus died, okay? So Laban's gone to shear his sheep. And Rachel, because he wasn't in the house, Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. Now Jacob doesn't know about this. No one knows, but Rachel knows. And there is, I went to the commentaries today to read this again, and there's no shortage of comments on what this means. The word, I think, is teraphim, for what it says, idols. Teraphim, it's similar to the word seraphim, which was angels. And some thought that these were supposed to be, you know, angels that represented different features of good luck of God's character, and he would, you know, they were like charms. And some have said, well, they were also made of precious metal, and she didn't steal them because she was worshiping those gods. But Rachel took them because, as she said in the same chapter, he has stolen our wealth. They were made out of gold or silver. She took them. You read later, they're small enough to hide in the camel saddle bags. So they're not big. It'd be hard to, you know, carry around a big old Buddha and not have your husband know. And so there's something small. There's something valuable. They were getting mixed up in idolatry a little bit. Remember, why did Abraham initially leave Ur? Family had gotten involved in idolatry. So she takes her father's gods. Now, I'm so glad that you and I have a God nobody can steal. I mean, Laban later comes home and he stomps around the house and says, "They stole my God." some of you remember the story where his name was Jerubbaal, Gideon, is, you know him by Gideon, that during the night he knocked over the altar to Baal. And the people in the town had a fit. And they said, "Bring him forth, whoever knocked over our God." And then Gideon's father said, "Look, if Baal is a god, let him plead for himself. You got to defend your God?" So she stole her father's gods. And Jacob stole away, I'm in verse 20, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had, and he arose and he crossed the river. Now that's Euphrates. Euphrates is the biggest river in the country. There's lots of little creeks and streams, but when it says the river, it's like if you live, you know, in the deep south, they say the river, and they're talking about the Mississippi. And so this was the Euphrates River. It was a big border that separated them from Mesopotamia. He crossed the river and headed towards the mountains of Gilead. And you'll understand later how those mountains got the name. And Laban was told on the third day, by the time news reached Laban, he was already several days separated, and he took his brethren with him. So Laban gathers kind of a small posse that outnumbers what Jacob might have to defend him. Jacob's got significant servants, and they pursue him for 7 days. Notice the numbers you find here. And he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good or bad. Don't make promises you can't keep and don't threaten him." So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountain, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, Jacob didn't try and run. I mean, when you got, you know, all these sheep and goats and women and children, you can't go very fast. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done? You've stolen away unknown to me, and you've carried away my daughters like captives, taken with the sword. Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me that I might have sent you away with joy and songs?" Right, he would never have done that. He would have sent him away empty with joy and songs. "With timbrel and harp, and you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing." Now, didn't God tell Laban, don't speak good or evil? He can't help himself. "It's in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.' Now you've surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house, but why," he said, "I understand you were getting homesick, but why did you steal my gods?" And then Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid," he's answering the first question, "for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force, with whomever," and he's adding, "with whomever you find your gods, do not let them live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you." For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. Now it's interesting that Jacob makes a vow, "Whoever finds your gods, do not let them live." Of Jacob's family, who is the first to die? Rachel. And I don't know if there's a connection, but I always thought that jumped out at me. And Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent. Now he's searching everything. He doesn't believe him. He went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tent, but he didn't find them. You notice who's last is Rachel. Then he went out of Leah's tent and he entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols and put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. You know, they would take the saddle off the camel and then they just bring it into the tent so it's safe and all its contents. And Laban searched all about the tent and did not find them. And she said to her father, "Please do not let it displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is upon me." Now, even as far back before the time of Moses, they considered that when a woman was going through her monthly cycle, she was considered unclean and anything she sat on was unclean. And that usually works for most guys, for them to say, "Okay, you know, I won't bother you." And she played that card. And it seemed to work. Don't let it displease you, but I cannot rise. I don't feel good. The manner of woman is upon me. He thought, I'm not going to search the saddlebags. And he searched, but he did not find his household idols. And then Jacob was angry. He said, "See, what did I tell you?" And he rebuked Laban and answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass and what is my sin that you've hotly pursued me as though you've searched through although you've searched through all my things? What part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both." This is something that Samuel says almost the same thing at the end of Samuel's tenure when they said, "Get us a king." He said, "Witness now before me, and all the time I've been your judge, one person, say, who have I bribed? Or who has bribed me? You show me, have I taken anyone's donkey?" They used to bribe with animals. And says, "Nobody's bribed me." And so Jacob is now saying, "Where's the beef?" so to speak. "Show me the evidence." And then he makes a very eloquent statement here. "These," I'm in verse 38, These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beasts, I did not bring it to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was in the day. The drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I have served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flocks. That's actually 20 years. And you've changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, because they are now getting near Isaac's territory. And if some of the servants escaped and told Isaac's soldiers, they might pursue him. Unless that had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. Ooh, that's a pretty good... You wonder, why did Jacob live a much shorter life than Abraham or Isaac? And part of it might be all that hard work he did that he describes there. The years of, you know, being consumed by the drought and by the frost and not sleeping at night, and that just hard labor had kind of taken its toll on him. And Laban answered and said to Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this flock is my flock." Listen to him, my. "All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore come, let us make a covenant." I mean, they go from haranguing each other to wanting to make a covenant. "Between you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." So Jacob took and he sets up a stone as a pillar. Now, where did he do that before? On his way out of the land, he has that dream at Bethel, and he sets up a pillar. Now he's on his way back into the land, and this actually marks another one of the borders of Israel. And he sets up a pillar. Then Jacob says to his brethren, "Gather stones," and they took the stones and they made a big heap. Sometimes then they'd, and they did this a few times, they made a big heap of stone on top of Absalom. They made a heap of stones on top of Achan. And here they're making another big heap of stones. And they ate and ate there on the heap. They made this big mound of stones, and they did a covenant. Now, often their covenants were sealed with a feast. Did Jesus make a covenant, seal it with a feast, and do it during the spring? It was a Passover. And Jacob said to his brethren, I'm sorry, in verse 47, Laban called it Jeger Sadudutha, but Jacob called it Galeed, which is later Gilead. And Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me this day." Therefore, its name was called Galeed. Also Mizpah, because he said, "May the Lord watch," and that means witness, "between you and me when we are absent from one another." And Laban says, "If you afflict my daughters, if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, God is witness between you and me." And then Laban said to Jacob, "Here is the heap, here is the pillar, which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap or this pillar to me for harm." Now, you know, if the Syrians, he calls him Laban the Syrian, and the Israelites could find that heap, that'd be really helpful. Because they said they're not going to pass from one to the other to war with each other. Boy, they've done a lot of warring they must have forgotten about. And, let's see here. And he says, "The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us." And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat. And they ate bread and they stayed all night in the mountain. And early in the morning, you notice after the feast, it happens early in the morning. It's when Jesus rose. Laban arose, he kissed his sons and his daughters, and he blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. So, first you notice that Jacob is fleeing from man, and he's caught between what you call a rock and a hard place, because he's running from Laban on one side, and now he's about to be running from Esau on the other side. And so that's where we enter 32. So Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. He needed some encouragement. Did Jacob see angels on his way out of Israel? Remember the escalator of angels? And now he's on his way back into Israel. The angels come again. Didn't God tell him, go back home, I'm with you? Well, he's going to need this encouragement. And Jacob saw them. He said, this is God's camp. And he called the name of the place Mahanaim. And this is mentioned many times in the Bible. I think David actually camps there once or twice. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, in the country of Edom. Now, I almost wish I had a map for this Bible study. So Jacob's coming from the Euphrates. He's coming from the north, going through the desert, through Gilead. And he hasn't crossed the Jordan yet. And he gets down. He's heading towards the Jabbok. The Edomites, or Esau, he had sort of gone across the Jordan. He's living down where you've got... mind is going blank here. What's the name of that fortress for the Edomites off in the desert? Petra, thank you. I've been there, I can't remember. Petra is where the Nabataeans, the Edomites, live. They're in the desert, the red rocks down there to the south. And he sends messengers. He's basically saying, I'm not going to come into the land. I want Esau to know. Dad is old. Esau is the next in line. I want him to be aware that I'm coming and be relaxed about my approach. And he commands him and he says, speak thus to my lord Esau, your servant. Notice, he said, I don't want the blessing of the firstborn anymore. I'm your servant. Thus your servant, Jacob, says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, and male and female servants. I sent to tell my lord that I might find favor in your sight, letting you know I'm coming. And why does he mention all this stuff? Now you're Esau. You're mad at your brother. He's stolen the birthright. The firstborn is supposed to get the lion's share, a double portion of the father's estate. And now Esau hears, oh, dad is still alive. Jacob's coming back so he can be here when dad dies and he can take the blessing of the firstborn. And he thought, Esau's going to suspect that I'm coming for the wrong reason. Because when I left, I was very grasping. And I just want him to know I have all I need. I'm not here because I want anything. So that's why he mentions what he's got. But it's not enough. And he says, then the messengers returned to Jacob. They probably go a day's journey south and a day's journey back. They're going maybe on a horse or camel. They're going quickly. The flocks and the family have to go slowly. We came to your brother Esau. He is also coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Now, this is not a welcoming party. Esau knows he's got a big family, and he figures that I'm going to come, and I'm going to kill him, and I'm going to take all that he has. So Jacob was greatly afraid. Jacob understood what it meant. That's why he's afraid. And he's distressed. And he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two companies. Why does he do this? He splits them up and kind of sends them in two different directions. Esau doesn't know how big or who his family is. He figures if he attacks one group, that's all that will be lost. The other one may escape free. If he attacks the other company, which was left, will escape. And then Jacob prays. And here's his prayer, verse 9 down to verse 12. Jacob says, O God, my father, Abraham, of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country. He's reminding God of his promises. And to your family, he said, I will deal well with you. Am I not worthy? He says, I'm not worthy of the least of these, of all your mercies, and of all the truth that you have shown your servant. For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I've become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother and from the hand of Esau. For I fear him, lest he comes and attack me and the mother with the children. For you have said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants like the sand of the sea that cannot be numbered for multitude. So it's interesting, he divides his family into two companies. What happens to the people of Israel later? There's a civil war, and from the time of Solomon on, they are divided in two companies. You got the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Jacob's also citing the promise of God. He's saying, you said that we're going to be as numberless as the sands. If we're all annihilated, then that won't happen. So Jacob said, look, I'll make every earthly provision, but I'm going to have to pray. So he does what he can humanly, and he separates the family into two groups. It's like, you know, if you get someone tracking you, and if two people escape from prison and the guards are tracking, you probably get better chances if you split up. And so that's basically what they're doing here.
Pastor?
Question?
Yes, sir. Where was Isaac also in the area of Petra?
No, Isaac was still living over towards Hebron, which is over near Judea. Right. Esau loved the wilderness. He loved hunting. The country was different back then. Esau had crossed over the Jordan, and he and his family began to fill the area north of Arabia. That's where the Edomites lived. So, yeah, Isaac, he wasn't with his father. And there's other verses that explain they're not in the same place at the time. Jacob and Esau actually come together later when their father dies, but they're both coming from different places. Yeah, that's a good point. They probably had separated just like Abraham and Lot because their flocks and herds were so big. All right, so it says that he gets done praying in verse 13. So he lodged there that same night, and he took what came to his hand as a present for Esau his brother. Now listen to this. He sends his brother a little present. 200 female goats, 20 male goats. Now, when you're a shepherd, you recognize that goats, you know, you need one male and 20 females. And so 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. This is a lot of cattle. He could have a ranch in Texas. Now, I want you to think about something. What was the promise? What was the covenant Jacob made when he left Israel and he saw the angels? He said, Lord said, I'll be with you wherever you go. And he said, Lord, if you'll keep me and bring me safe back into my father's land, of all that you give me, I will give a tenth to thee. Now, did Jacob go to church and did he give it when the plate went by?
No.
Put all that cattle in the plate? Who was the priest of the land? The priests were the sheikhs. They were the patriarchs of the families. Esau now, Jacob, you realize, Esau's 80. What did you figure out? He's over 80 years of age at this point, right? And so he's a patriarch. He's like the priest of his family. And Jacob now is giving a tenth of everything he has. So if you want to know how much Jacob has, just multiply by 10 what he's sending to his brother. And that's probably a conservative estimate. And boy, I tell you, those Israelites just had a way with, you've heard of people having a green thumb? Those shepherds had a way of multiplying their flocks. He probably needed a ram pickup truck to deal with it, I'm sure, or a few. So he's got this, he sends these gifts off ahead of him. He delivers them by droves, that means by, you know, little herds, to his servants. It says, pass over before me. Put some distance between the successive droves. And he commanded the first one, saying, when Esau my brother meets you and asks you, to whom do you belong and where are you going? Whose are these in front of you? Meaning the cattle. They say, they are your servants Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau, and behold, he is behind us. And he commanded the second and the third, and there were fourth and fifth and sixth of these droves. So the gifts come in waves. And whenever Esau doesn't know there's another wave coming, he says, Jacob's back there. But before Jacob ever arrives, then there's a wave of the goats, and then there's a wave of sheep, then there's a wave of camels, then there's a wave of cows, and I don't know what else I left out, donkeys. And so he's got all these animals that are coming, and it's softening his heart, and he's realizing, maybe Jacob isn't coming because he wants my father's stuff. Looks like he's got plenty of stuff. And I think it begins to relax his fears. Now notice Proverbs 18:16. A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. Proverbs 21:14. A gift in secret pacifies anger. So he's sending these gifts off ahead to try to cool what could potentially be the anger of his brother. And so the droves are going to come on in waves. For he said, I will appease him. And now I'm in verse 20 of chapter 32. He said, behold, I will appease him with the present that goes before me. Afterward, I'll see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So the present went on over before him. But he himself lodged that night in the camp. And he arose that night, and he took his two wives and his two female servants, meaning Zilpha and Bilhah, and his 11 sons, who's not born yet. Benjamin hasn't been born yet, because Rachel dies giving birth to Benjamin. And he crossed over the ford of the Jabbok. Now, the Jabbok River, it's one of the few rivers it runs into. It's pretty much a stream by our standards that runs into the Jordan. And then from the Jordan down to the Dead Sea. It's the border of the Ammonites, just to give you an idea. It's on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And so he's still heading down towards the south. And he rose that night, and he took his family and his sons, and they crossed over the ford of the Jabbok. He took them, and he sent them over the brook. And he sent over what he had, and then Jacob was left alone. Now, this is a very brief passage here, but it's filled with significance for the history of Israel. So Jacob now, he's done all he can do humanly. He's prayed. He's separated his family into two groups. He sends gifts on ahead to try to pacify the anger and the concerns of Esau. And after he's done everything he can do humanly, he realizes now this is the turning point of his life. He left a deceiver. He left in shame. He's been living as a stranger for years in another land. He's got this, the whole family, his whole life has changed. And now he's trying to come back home. He wants to see his father. He wants to fulfill the promise that God had made to Abraham. And it just says, Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Boy, that one verse. It's like he was left alone and decided to get into a wrestling match. It's so brief. Now, when you read the book, Patriarchs and Prophets, there's a little more detail here. And some of this is drawn from other Jewish history. So he starts out praying. He's by himself. He wants to spend time alone praying. Did Jesus spend time alone praying with a great wrestling with God before the cross? Yes, he did. And Jacob now is wrestling before he crosses the Jordan. And it's the same time of year. With earnest cries and tears, he made his prayer before God. This is in the book Patriarchs and Prophets, page 196. Suddenly, a strong hand is laid upon him. He thought that an enemy was seeking his life. He's in this country that it's, you know, got rough ravines and haunts and a good place for a bandit. And he's already on edge because he's wondering if his brother's going to show up with his army. And when this strong hand reaches down on your shoulder when you're praying, you might jump. You're spooked. And it says, not a word is spoken, but Jacob put forth all of his strength. Now, he must have been a strong character because he's been a shepherd for years. He lives to 137. Now he's like 80-something, I think we discovered. He's almost 100 now. That's right, he's like 80 when he got married. And so he's, but keep in mind, Jacob had almost superhuman strength. You remember when he first met Rachel? That was under the context of his moving the stone lid on a well that usually took several shepherds to move. He does it by himself. The Bible actually makes a note of that, that he's a very strong man. So he puts forth all his strength, and he does not relax his efforts for a moment. While he was thus battling for his life, the sense of his guilt pressed upon his soul. Now, this is a wrestling match. You know, I used to wrestle in military school. And used to love to wrestle. I was the youngest of our three brothers, one real brother and a stepbrother, and I got beat up a lot, and so I liked to wrestle. I did pretty good. I was a pretty good wrestler. And, boy, few things will take it out of you. Now, if you're boxing, I used to box a little, too. My mother dated a Golden Gloves boxer for years, and when my brother and I would have a fight, he just handed us the gloves. Any of you have parents like that? They said, here's the gloves, work it out. And it usually wore us out eventually. But boxing, you can run in, you can swing a little bit, and then you can jump back and kind of catch your breath. Wrestling, you are pitting muscle for muscle. Every time you're pushing, they're pushing back, and it's like constant. It is exhausting. Just the boxers will go 15 rounds. Wrestling, it's a couple of minutes. Because you just, it's this constant strain and effort that goes on and on, and it can be exhausting. So how you wrestle through the whole night, that in itself, to me, is amazing. Because if you're human, you're just going to be falling over after 10 minutes of wrestling. It would be exhausting. He puts forth all of his strength, does not relax his efforts for a moment. While he was thus battling for his life, the sense of his guilt pressed upon his soul. His sins rose up before him to shut him out from God. But in his terrible extremity, he remembered God's promises, and his whole heart went out in entreaty for his mercy. So he's got time to think this is going on so long, though this is happening to me because of my sin. The struggle continued till near the break of day. When the stranger placed his finger on Jacob's thigh, he was crippled instantly. I don't know if he broke his tendon, and you know, you've heard of people pulling their hamstring or something happened. And he's in tremendous pain. Now he knows he's in conflict with a heavenly messenger. And this is why his almost superhuman effort had not gained the victory. It was Christ, the angel of the covenant. Now you notice it says here in the Bible, it says while he's there, it says a man wrestled with him. You look in Joshua 5:13, and it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, a man stood opposite him with a sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said, Joshua's fearless, are you for us or for our adversaries? He said, no, but as commander of the army of the Lord I have come. Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said, what does my Lord say to his servant? He said, take your shoes off your feet, for this is holy ground. Who was Joshua talking to? Jesus. This is what you call a Christophany. It's when Jesus appears prior to his incarnation, as he did maybe to Abraham and Moses and a few other patriarchs. So it first calls him a man in the story of Joshua, and it calls him a man in the story of Jacob. But later, Jacob says, I have seen God, and I'm preserved. So I'm still quoting from Patriarchs and Prophets. It was Christ, the angel of the covenant, who had revealed himself to Jacob. The patriarch was now disabled and suffering the keenest pain, but he would not loosen his hold. All penitent and broken, he clung to the angel. He wept and he made supplication, pleading for a blessing. By the way, if you read in Hosea 12, and you might make a note of this, verse 3 and 4, one of the few places later in the Bible that refers to this experience. He took his brother by the heel in the womb. Who is it that took his brother by the heel?
Jacob.
And then his strength, he struggled with God. So Jacob comes into the world wrestling, doesn't he? He's wrestling with his brother there in the womb. Yes, he struggled with the angel. I'm still in Hosea. He struggled with the angel and he prevailed. He wept and he sought favor from him. He found him in Bethel and there he spoke to us. So both when he came in, I'm sorry, both when he went out of Israel, when he came back in, Bethel, and when he wrestled with the angel. He must have the assurance that his sin was pardoned. Physical pain was not sufficient to divert his mind from this object. When Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, was he aware he was about to experience terrible physical pain? But when he says, Lord, if it's possible for this cup to pass from me, that'd be great. But if not, your will be done. Now, do we all need to kind of experience the same wrestling? It's a wrestling with self. And you need to be willing to deny the flesh. Jacob is, he's ignoring the pain of the flesh that he might have the blessing of the Spirit. Before he did it with deception, trying to get the blessing, now he's doing it by hanging on to God.
Pastor,
yes?
What are your thoughts about why Jesus decided to appear in this fashion to Jacob and then plus wrestle all night?
So why did Jesus, let me repeat your question, why did Jesus choose to appear to Jacob like this and wrestle all night? First, Jacob is praying to God. Christ comes to him personally and places a hand on him to comfort him, but he thinks he's an enemy. That's a lesson. What happened there is a lesson for us, and Jesus allowed it to be that. Sometimes we don't realize God is with us. God had said, Jacob, I'm going to be with you. And here, Jacob is still afraid, and he's wrestling against God, who's his friend. There's probably several other places in the Bible where some of God's servants have not realized God was with them. I saw one more hand. Quick question?
Yes. Without God, I can't. Without me, God wouldn't. In life, three things in life that destroy person is hard death, cry, and forgiveness. Is this little to guys, according to the Proverbs 16:7, a man, when a man's word pleases the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him.
Let me repeat that for our friends. That's a good verse. It says in the Bible that if a man pleases the Lord, if his ways please the Lord, even his enemies will be at peace with him. And that's a good point, especially with what's coming. And so let me just cover this passage I'm reading here from Patriarchs and Prophets. He says, the angel tried to release himself. He urged, let me go for the day breaks. I mean, what's going to happen? Is he going to turn into a pumpkin or something? Let me go. The sun is rising. I'm going to melt. Is that what Jesus is saying to Jacob? Or is Jesus saying, you need to let me go. The day is breaking. You need to go be with your family before Esau arrives. He said, look, the day's coming. You know you've got business to attend to. I'm going to watch over you. Jesus is not saying to Jacob, you've got to get me. No, I can't stand the light or something. I can't be seen in the day. And by the way, can you hang on to God and not him not be able to get out of your grip? But you notice that Jesus is allowing Jacob to hang on to him.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's the whole thing.
He's not fighting that hard to get away. He said, let me go for the day breaks. But Jacob answered. Now, do you remember when Jesus is walking down the road to Emmaus with the two disciples? They don't know it's Jesus. And there comes to a fork in the road, and the sun's going down. And they said, come stay with us. He said, no, I'm going to keep going down the road. And they urged him. And he comes in, and he stays with them. And so here, it's like he's saying, look, you need to ask me. For the day breaks, but Jacob answered, I will not let thee go except thou bless me. Now, had this been a boastful, presumptuous confidence, Jacob would have been instantly destroyed. He's not bragging, God, you can't get away from me. But this was, he's really pleading for mercy. I don't want to let go of you and your promise unless you give me some assurance. When God sent the prophet Isaiah to Hezekiah, who had been weeping and praying, and said, I'm going to give you 3 more years of life. And he says, I'm going to give you a sign as assurance. Sometimes God gives signs as assurance. He confesses his unworthiness, yet he trusts the faithfulness of the covenant-keeping God. So let me get back to our story here. We're almost done. Let's see what we're doing with time. It says, he wrestled till the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip. I'm back in the Bible, and I'm in verse 25. And his hip was out of joint. And he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he says to him, what is your name? Now, did Jesus know what his name was? Why does God ask questions like that? He asked the disciples, what were you talking about on the road? Did he know what they were talking about on the road? He says to Adam, where are you? Did he know where Adam was? Yeah. He says, what have you done? God knows what they had done. God gives us an opportunity to, he wants us to answer. What is your name? Now, why did he ask him his name? Because his name meant what? What does Jacob mean?
Deceiver.
Trickster, con artist, deceiver. That's what Jacob meant. He had left the land a deceiver. He had tricked his father and his brother. He said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. Now Jacob had been struggling with Laban. He had been struggling with Esau. He had been struggling with God. And it says, you are an overcomer. He was persistent in prayer and persistent in planning. And he said, your new name is Israel. There's a land you'll see on the map now. Where does that land get its name? This is the story where you discover the origin of that land that's in the news almost every day. It all goes back to this time where Jacob is wrestling with God. And from that day to this day, do we see Israel seems to be small, outnumbered, but wrestling. Not only literal Israel, but spiritual Israel, still wrestling. And he said, your name shall be called Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. You know, many times now through the Bible, it refers to the people of Jacob. Sometimes it calls them the people of Jacob. Sometimes it calls them Israel. It goes back and forth. And it's an interesting study in the scriptures when it chooses to use the new name Jacob for the nation. Sometimes it's because they're misbehaving. They're the tricksters. And then later when it's giving a promise, it'll call them Israel. Not every time, but it's just an interesting study. The Bible prophets go back and forth between these two names in the history.
Pastor,
yes.
What does Israel mean?
Israel means a prince with God or an overcomer with God. Someone who has prevailed with God. Then Jacob said, tell me your name. That's the normal question. You meet someone, you say, what's your name? Tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why do you ask about my name? It's almost like Jesus is saying, I've been with you all these years, and you're saying, who am I? It's like where, who is it, Philip that says to Jesus, show us the Father? Was it Philip? And he said, have I been with you this long? And you say, show us the Father? Don't you know who I am? If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. It's almost like Jesus is saying, Jacob, what do you mean, asking my name? I'm the same God that talked to Moses. I guess Moses wasn't born yet. I'm the same God that talked to Abraham and to Isaac, that spoke to Noah and the rest. Said, what is your name? By the way, the parents of Samson, you remember when the angel appeared to them? They also said, what is your name? And he said, why do you ask after my name? It is wonderful. Now, what do we learn about some of the names of the Lord? His name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And it says he blessed him there. So what was it that Jacob was clinging to? He said, I won't let you go until you bless me. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face. The Bible says no man has seen God. And yet Jesus, here it says that he's seen God. Later it says no man has seen the Father. If you and I were to see the unveiled glory of the Father, we'd just be vaporized. We couldn't handle it. So Jacob did see, many did see Christ in his veiled glory. He says, I've seen God face to face and my life is preserved. By the way, Moses, Abraham, and others saw him. Just as he crossed over Penuel, that's where the name comes from, the sun rose on him and he limped on his hip. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle that shrank. That's why we think it may have been a torn hamstring, yeah, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip in the muscle that shrank. We don't know if he, you know, was ever able to walk again without a cane or how bad it was, but Paul said, I'll rejoice in my infirmities if I might have Christ, right? Likewise, the Spirit also helps in our weakness, for we do not know how we ought to pray, but the Spirit himself makes intercession for us with groanings that cannot be uttered. One more scripture I want to give you before I quit. The experience of Jacob, we read in prophecy, Jeremiah 30, verse 7, is going to be repeated by people in the end of time. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble, but he will be saved out of it. Just as Jacob is wrestling with the angel, praying that his sins are forgiven, praying to be delivered from impending judgment, about to enter the promised land, later when God's people are about to enter the promised land, are we going to go through a time of trouble? Where we're going to be wrestling. We're going to have to know how to wrestle with God and hang on and claim the promises of God and until we are renamed. Does the Lord say he's given us a new name? And Jesus will write a new name on a stone for each of us. So there's a lot of beautiful lessons in here for us that talk about the gospel. With that, you know, I think we're going to sign off for those that are watching on Facebook or social media. God bless you. Hope you study with us again this coming Sabbath as well as next week. I'll wait until I see the "we're done" sign. We'll have our local prayer and prayer requests here. Maybe, there we go. Pastor Ross, you want to lead us in our prayer requests? Or? No, no, Mike had a final question.
I have a final question for you. What is your thinking about why Jesus decided to cripple Jacob at that point? What was the point there? What was the message? What was the lesson?
Well, God says, "My strength is made perfect in weakness." And sometimes sometimes the Lord has to, some people go through a physical trial in order that they might be humbled and never forget. You know, I think Jacob, when he came away, if you'd been touched by God, if you could actually wrestle with God, if you had to limp the rest of your life, and every time you limped, you realized, "I saw God face to face," you almost might embrace that as a blessing. Just think about that.